Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's SmackDown Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing this week's WWE SmackDown at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, folks, many people have described these last couple of weeks of WWE television as the worst in the company's history. And certainly, the ratings have steadily declined for both Raw and SmackDown products over the last several weeks, if not months. And the WWE really had to bounce back from what a lot of people were calling back-to-back horrible Raw episodes and a very, very lame episode last week. Now, if you're a regular listener to this show, you know I did not find this week's Monday Night Raw anywhere near as bad as last week's. And I said I was going to give them a pass on it simply because it felt to me like they were trying to hit the reset button. It felt to me like they were starting chapter one of a brand new season, so to speak. And they were attempting to flesh out who their main faces were going to be, who their main heels were going to be. They were setting the stage for what's coming. And sometimes when you do that, it makes for a boring first chapter, just like in a book you might read or the first episode of a television show that's going to be a weekly thematic television show. Now, there's really no excuse for it because they shouldn't have to hit the reset button. They've been doing this for I don't know how long. But still, all in all, some good things I thought came out of Monday Night Raw. I thought that setting up Seth Rollins as having a third finisher that actually does finish people bodes well for his future matches, so that when the referee goes down for a two count on a certain move that never pins anybody, fans don't automatically think, oh, he's not going to get pinned with this. Now there could be some excitement in the Seth Rollins match. He has the curb stomp. He has this Falcon Arrow. And he has the knee to the face. All three of them have finished people. So we can't say for certain now when any of those moves land, this isn't going to be the end. Now, if Dolph Ziggler could only pin a few people with the Famouser, and more wrestlers would do that where they have two or three established moves that actually does win matches, I think it would be more exciting. So I gave that a pass. I think giving Elias a big spot, and say what you want, but having Elias be the first guy out to confront this new faction of Baron Corbin and Drew McIntyre and Bobby Lashley means that they're going to be using Elias. And at the end, having Finn Balor be the main event, win, lose, or draw, means they're going to be using Finn Balor. So for that reason, I didn't think this week's Raw was as bad as last week's Raw, which was pathetically bad. And this week's SmackDown kind of fills that bill too. Last week's SmackDown was not as bad as last week's Raw, but it was certainly not a good show. This week, I felt that SmackDown improved somewhat. Now, of course, it's going to help that you have AJ Styles on the show. You have Becky Lynch on the show. Of course, that helped. But it was more than that, so let's get to exactly the good and the bad from this week's SmackDown. We start out with Paige in the ring, and she introduces the return of Becky Lynch, this is funny. No matter how you feel about the WWE or Becky Lynch, it is really funny to watch how almost giddily happy the WWE is that they finally have a female worker who's getting a male-type reaction. I mean, the WWE just couldn't promote her anymore. They're just like, wow, no, Becky Lynch, Becky Lynch, Becky Lynch. It's almost funny. I hope they don't go overboard, because the whole idea behind Becky Lynch being popular is that the WWE didn't want to force her on us. As a matter of fact, they didn't want to give us much from her. And if it starts to appear that the WWE is really forcing her on us now and saying, oh, you like Becky Lynch, we're going to, then the fans might back off a little. So the WWE has to watch this very carefully. But anyway, Becky Lynch comes out, and I got to tell you, folks, sometimes you got to be careful what you wish for. Because when you get it, it's not quite as good as you'd hoped. I don't like the idea of turning Becky Lynch into a bona fide face. And I'll tell you why. I thought they may have to. Because what other option do they have? She's being cheered wildly. But don't change her attitude one bit. Because if you do, it's not going to work. And I'm seeing signs of that. It's fine that she acknowledges the fans and smiles when they're chanting her name. That's going to be hard for her not to do that. And I think that's okay. But I don't think I don't think Paige should be all kissing her ass. I don't think we should have her dressing down Charlotte Flair for what she did. This I didn't like. What she should have said, I think, is you didn't finish the job. She tried to cut it off when she said, oh, you know, you went in there and you tried to be me. That was, I guess, as good as she could possibly do when confronting Charlotte Flair. But I wish she'd went a little bit further and said you didn't finish the job. Had I been there, you know, I know she said if it was me, I would have done X, Y, and Z. But it almost felt like Becky Lynch was saying, well, you didn't beat her, though. It's not good enough to beat her up. You didn't beat her. And I just wish if you were going to do this whole thing with Becky Lynch, you would have had Becky Lynch actually be okay with what Charlotte Flair did and said, look, you went in there and tried to kick some ass, and you know, you gave Ronda Rousey a little bit of a lesson. And, you know, all I can say is I wish it was more. Then if you want Charlotte to flip and say, well, you know, last week I said some things that weren't true. I said I did this for you. I said I did this for the SmackDown locker room. That's not true. I did this for you, but for a different reason. I did this for you to show you what's waiting for you. I didn't really have anything against Ronda Rousey, so I just took out my frustration on her. Then we would have said, oh, okay, I get it now. I get where this is going. But to just have Charlotte Flair kind of say, oh, well, I finally found me, the real me, and I wasn't too thrilled with it. And I think Becky came off looking not the badass that she normally came off. I mean, the Becky Lynch that was standing on the Raw rampway bleeding with a busted nose smiling for the crowd, that was a badass Becky Lynch. This one I saw in the ring is trying hard to walk that tightrope between old Becky Lynch and new Becky Lynch. Don't do it. Just do the new Becky Lynch. Forget this nonsense, or it's going to go right back down to the mid card for you. I'm telling you, you didn't do this with Steve Austin. Don't do it with Becky Lynch. Don't make the mistake, because you really do have lightning in a bottle here. You really do have probably the most popular, arguably, but I would say it's a good argument, the most popular female wrestler of all time right now, as far as crowd response. That crowd popped more than when AJ Styles came out. So while I do like what they did, Mike, and then the girls came out and they all decided, you know, we're important too. And Paige said, yes, we're going to have a battle royal. It set the tone for a really good main event of SmackDown, and one that was important or felt important. But I worry just that little bit about modifying Becky Lynch. What do you think?
Yeah, I worry a bit about modifying Becky Lynch. I don't want to see her, you know, take steps backwards is basically what it looks like they're trying to do there. No, go full speed ahead and do that. And look, one other thing you mentioned, you have three moves, you know, that can pin people or submit people. Well, who's one of the few wrestlers over the past 10 years that has had that? It's been Paige. You know, she had the PTO, she had the Rampage, and she had Paige Turner. All three moves were strong moves, and she used them to pin people or submit people, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly my point. When you have more than one move that you have conditioned the fans to believe will finish a match, then you have more options to give false finishes to a match. Because as it stands now, unless it's their finisher, and even that doesn't finish them half the time, we know that two count's going to be just that, a two count. So, yeah, the more they can do that, the better. As far as the thing with Becky Lynch, I don't want to overplay it. I still think she did fine. I just want to make sure that there was one or two things in there that came off phony. When she said, oh, I'll tear all the heads off every one of you in this women's division, that came off phony. I don't think the fans want a Becky Lynch that's that way. I think Becky Lynch would have been better served to just say, I'm not afraid of anybody in this division. Whoever wants to fight me, fight me. It just came off weird. I know it's semantics, but semantics count in pro wrestling because it's how you perceive that person. And I don't want Becky Lynch to lose any of that fire. And sometimes if you try to jump the shark and be too fiery, it comes off as being forced. And then fans don't react to that. So she has to be very careful. So far, she's been doing an excellent job. But I do think that she could have done a little better this week. But all in all, the opening to SmackDown did one good thing, and that is it reintroduced Becky Lynch. It got us the feud we know we're going to get eventually again with Becky Lynch and Charlotte, apparently. With Charlotte kind of, I think, leaning more toward the heel. And it obviously did a little bit to help the women's division because the whole women's division opened the show. So not too bad of a start to SmackDown, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, when Becky Lynch came out, she was more like towards like the heelish, more heelish Becky Lynch we've seen in the past couple months. When she first turned and fans were cheering for her and everything, it looks like this is going to be like the new Becky Lynch we're going to see down the road from here.
Yeah, I hope. I mean, I just, again, it's semantics. I just don't think she came off as well this week as in past weeks because I know the WWE, in their infinite wisdom, has said, okay, we're moving you more into that face area, badass face, but still face area, so you can be a little more friendly to the fans. You can be a little more, a little less of a loose cannon. You could be a little calmer. I don't think that's a good idea. The fan thing is okay. Acknowledge the fans. Don't overly acknowledge the fans. I don't want to see you down there slapping five with people. I'm glad her entrance has changed and she's not doing the little, you know, steampunk thing anymore. That's good. I just want her to be a little more chip on the shoulder where it's not necessarily arrogance. It's just eagerness to prove herself. See, that was what made Becky Lynch popular. It wasn't that she was arrogant and said, I'm better than everybody else in this federation and by 10 times. That's not what made her popular. What made her popular was her eagerness to prove herself. I know I can do this. I believe in myself. I can get this done. And that's what we need from Becky Lynch, especially if she's going to be a face, Mike.
Especially if she's going to be a face. And you know, we want her to be that Steve Austin face. You know, we don't want to see her, you know, slapping five. Yeah, if you're going to get too close to the side and where people can reach out and touch you, yeah, that's going to happen. But don't allow her to, you know, intentionally go there and, you know, slap five with him or whatever it is. Just have her come to the ring and do what she does and say what she said, you know. And that's what's going to keep this thing fresh, and that's what's going to keep this thing the way it's going to keep it.
Yeah, and let's hope they're able to do it. Yeah, I don't have a ton. I have a lot of faith in Becky Lynch. I don't have a ton of faith in the WWE. And the WWE might really blow this. I hope they don't. I liken it back to Roddy Piper. It was very, very difficult when you were going to turn Roddy Piper face. You had some issues, and the issues were the wild, crazy things he did as a heel, and his uncaring attitude, and his bravado, and his whatever. It didn't play off quite as well as a face who needs sympathy from the crowd. And you have to be very careful when you do that. The WWE did an excellent job with Steve Austin. Excellent job. And they need to learn from that, because she's closer to Steve Austin than Roddy Piper. Because she comes off more of an ass kicker type person than a devious, sort of Roddy Piperish type person. So they're gonna have to walk a thin line with it. This week, I think, wasn't terrific. It wasn't terrific. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't terrific. Anyway, what else did we get in this show? Well, we get a very, very unusual Rusev and Nakamura matchup, where basically Rusev doesn't even get in the ring. And I guess this is their way of saying we're going to have a Rusev and Nakamura feud, which is about time that Nakamura got a feud. They're bragging. He's been champion 145 days. Yeah, and has he had one feud? My God, has that 145 days been terrible or what? And it's not his fault. This is his first real major feud, if that's what they're going to do with this. And I get it. Don't get me wrong. I totally get it. But if I paid good money for a seat and said, oh, wow, Nakamura is going to fight Rusev tonight, and that's what I got, I'm not a happy man. I mean, at the end of the day, we as TV viewers can say whatever. We have nothing invested in it but a few minutes of our time. But, you know, if you're going to a SmackDown taping and one of the main things advertised is a match between Nakamura and Rusev, and that's what you get, that could cause a few problems there, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it's about time we see Nakamura in a feud and being on TV in a while, regular TV in a while. Maybe we'll see a good feud out of this and maybe fight over this U.S. belt.
Well, apparently they're going to, but I mean, at the end of the day, Mike, if you get in your car, you drive, I don't know, 40 miles, pay for your food, you get sit in your seat, which you paid, I don't know, $50, $60, $70 for, and one of the reasons you came is because, oh, this is going to be a great match between Rusev and Nakamura. This should be a good match. And that's what you get. You're going to walk out of there saying to yourself, I feel ripped off.
Yeah, you really are. I mean, it's not just the parking, because if you bring your kids with you, You know they're gonna want a T-shirt, maybe a foam finger, maybe whatever they're selling. They're gonna want something, you know. And that's more money you're paying for what? A couple of 10 seconds, a minute, you know, of him giving him a couple of Kinshasas, and that's it.
Never got a match, so that match is null and void. You didn't get it. Didn't get it. Also, no Daniel Bryan this week. However, there was AJ Styles. And AJ Styles comes out and cuts what I think is a pretty decent promo. The highlight of the promo, I think, is when AJ Styles says, you'll notice that Daniel Bryan isn't here tonight. I'd fight him if he was here tonight, but he's not here tonight. And let's just hope that he's not borrowing or thinking he's going to borrow Raw's playbook of how their champion defends. That's a good line. That's a really good line. Now, the thing is, AJ without a belt, I never thought I'd say this, but I think AJ Styles does need a belt, because AJ without a belt seems weird. And I don't think he's getting it back, because from everything that I'm being told, he wants a little bit lighter schedule so he can spend a little bit more time at home with his family and stuff like that. And when he's saying a champion should be on the show every week, he means it. Now, that doesn't mean he can't be on the show every week, because that's just once a week that he can fly out and be on the show. He might just cut down his house shows or whatever schedule. But I got a feeling he might not get it back. Or maybe the WWE will realize AJ without a belt isn't worth as much as AJ with a belt, because I truly think that the fans bought into AJ Styles being the champion as really being a representative of themselves and the brand very well. I don't think they're buying into Daniel Bryan. And I don't know who Daniel Bryan will fight past this. I'm looking at the Daniel Bryan thing saying, well, who have they got in store for him if AJ Styles doesn't become the champion again? Who's the guy that would take over that spot if Daniel Bryan drops, which he's going to have to eventually? And I'm saying to myself, I don't see one. I really don't. I mean, I guess you could go with Rey Mysterio, but you went that way before and it didn't work. God bless Rey Mysterio. He's an awesome athlete, but he's not the guy you want on top. And I'm looking around that locker room and I'm saying, not sure. The Miz as a face isn't going to work. So AJ did, I think, as good as he could do. And a testament to how good he did was that Daniel Bryan actually got booed when his name was brought up and some of the things he did to AJ Styles was shown on the monitor mic. He got pretty roundly booed, which is a good thing, because usually fans are fickle in that.
That's right. And look, you know, as far as he needs the championship, you know, I do agree with you, because they still have him saying, this is the house that AJ Styles built. And that kind of doesn't ring true when he doesn't have the championship, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly my point. And it just feels like, I don't know, maybe it's just me because we're, I guess, quote unquote, smart fans, but it just feels to me like AJ Styles is saying, at this stage of my career, I don't want to be the champion. But I got to pretend I do want to be the champion. And I feel that, Mike. I don't know why.
Yeah, it kind of feels that way to me now. At some point down, I mean, we talked about, you know, what's next for Daniel Bryan. And, I mean, we've basically seen some of this stuff. Now what could happen is this feud between Rusev and, you know, we could see somewhere down the line Rusev Daniel Bryan thing, but they got to start building Rusev somehow. Now will they build Rusev, or will they build somebody else to be that next guy?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be Rusev. I just have this feeling that you've probably seen Rusev peak as much as he's going to. Now, he might get a run as U.S. champion, especially if Nakamura isn't going to re-sign. And God knows I wouldn't blame him. But I don't think Rusev's going to be a guy that's going to you're going to see on top either. See, that's the thing. You got to look at who do you want to be the face? Oh, SmackDown. Well, Daniel Bryan is not a bad choice. He's a well-respected wrestler, and fans do come to see him, and so that's not a bad choice. AJ Styles is a great choice. Take those two out of that equation. And I don't know. Who's the next guy? Who's the next choice? Everybody else seems far down on that ladder. Everybody else doesn't seem to be on that level. And that's a shame. Anyway, let's go with the Bar versus the New Day. First off, New Day had a pretty funny segment backstage with The Miz, who, again, sometimes I get hammered by people who say, I can't believe you think that highly of the Miz. He's not really that great. I don't know what to tell you, because I think he is. Everything the Miz does just seems to work for me. I don't know. And he's really doing a much better job than even, like, at this stage, Becky Lynch is doing, of walking that tightrope now between I'm a heel, but I'm not really a heel. He's walking that tightrope really well. He hasn't changed that much, enough, if you know what I mean, to make the fans say, yeah, I'm kind of siding in his direction. Had a very funny exchange with the New Day. We got to hear Big E actually sing a little bit of Kane's old theme song, if people remember that. That was funny. And they brought up the Marine. And now I guess if you're, what do they call them, Mariners? If you're a Marines fan, I don't know. It was a pretty funny segment. And he then says he could beat any one of the New Day. And says he's going to go off and find Chain. Challenge one of the New Day. That's a good segment, Mike. And I think The Miz is doing a really good job here on SmackDown.
I really do think the Miz is doing a good job. And it's a very nuanced job of how they're trying to, if anything, have him walk in that gray area, you know, that Steve
right.
Austin type of area where you could cheer him, you could boo him. It depends on who he's against at the time, you know. It's kind of what they've done with what Ric Flair did later on in his career, where you could cheer him, you could boo him, that type of thing. And I mean, I agree with you. This guy is what a professional wrestler is supposed to be, The Miz.
He really is. And, you know, the difference, Mike, is when he's a heel, he has to be an intolerable cheater and a coward. And then when he's sort of a face, he has to be a sort of irascible egomaniac, but still kind of funny and likable. You know what I mean? There's a very subtle nuance to the difference, and we're seeing that now in The Miz.
Right. And look, it started, this whole process started when Maryse announced that she was pregnant. You don't have a heel announce that his wife is pregnant. So when they allowed him to do that, that they kind of went, my spider sense is saying, okay, they're at some point going to turn the Miz face.
Well,
and
what I love
continued.
Is WWE gets in full panic mode when bad things happen. So the following things happened that the WWE got in full panic mode over. A, Braun Strowman went down injured. We don't know how long he's going to be up. B, Roman Reigns is out indefinitely, and he was one of their top guys. Ronda Rousey getting booed, and them thinking maybe she's not going to be as popular as we thought. And then in the process of this, they start looking around saying, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And especially on Raw, they say, okay, Tony Elias, face. We need a face. It'll be Elias. They were cheering him anyway. Yeah, why didn't you do that a month ago? 2 months ago? 3 months ago? Give Finn Balor a main event. He's our backup guy. He's our bench guy. We'll push Finn. Yeah, why didn't you do that a few months ago? Now they're in panic mode again, saying, what do we do over on SmackDown? You know, we need another, we turn Daniel Bryan heel. We need another big face if AJ's going to take time off and stuff. And we've kind of buried Rusev. The Miz. Everybody likes The Miz. We'll just do what the fans like. Oh, finally. You only want to do what we say when you're in panic mode, when you can't do what you want. See, that's the weird thing about the WWE. Anyway, we get The Bar versus The Usos. And contrary to what a lot of people have written me and said about, wow, The Bar has just dropped. I mean, it's ridiculous. They've lost to the AOP. They're losing to The Usos. They don't feel like champions. I kind of disagree with that because I don't necessarily think there's any shame in losing to the Usos, especially when they give them that kind of a fight where it's very close. And Cesaro was supposed to have been pre-injured backstage by the Big Show. That one, I have no clue what's going on. Why would you put the Big Show with the Bar and then keep him there for, I don't know, a month and a half, 2 months? And then, no, he's gone. That doesn't make any sense to me at all. I don't know what the hell was going through their minds. That's what I mean when I say we just got poor writing. Because if you were going to do this and your big plan was eventually to get the Big Show away from the bar, why don't you tease it for a while? I mean, he just barely showed up. I just think it's ridiculous. I don't know what's going on. I don't know whether the Big Show's got other obligations or he's hurt again, or I don't know what's going on. But that just seemed very, very rushed to me, Todd, and it makes me think something's up.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, we don't know what's going on with the Big Show. He might be injured. He might have other obligations to do other things. But you never know. We don't know what's going on with that.
I don't know. I mean, they can't be turning the face again. If that's the case, that is ludicrous, because he returned as a face and fought Randy Orton, and then he was a heel. And I mean, he turns every 5 minutes, Mike.
Right. And that's the thing now. I mean, it can't be that he's hurt. I mean, he literally has not had how many matches has he actually had since he's been back? And we haven't seen him be put in the steps or being put into, they haven't done anything like they did with Braun Strowman to him, where they put his arm on a step or whatever, or threw him into the barricade or whatever. So, I mean, things that would actually get you hurt that would lead to him being out due to an injury. So, I mean, is he really injured? Or like you said, is it poor writing or is it questionable writing?
I don't know what the hell's going on with it. It blew my mind because I'm like, what are you doing? And you're doing it backstage, away from the fan. I have no idea what that was all about. Found that really bizarre. Anyway, it was a good match. Very good match, I thought. And the Usos go over, so you know they're going to be the next guys in contention because, quite frankly, we have three tag teams on SmackDown, don't we? Three that matter. That bothers me a little bit. I'm not going to lie to you. It bothers me a little bit that the tag team wrestling in both brands is bad, but you've got a good roster of tag team talent. You're just not using it. Instead, it's let's bring out the same guys over and over and over and over, and that's all that we care about. Nobody else is close to contenders. Don't care for that. Anyway, let's go to – we did the Rusev match with Nakamura. There's not much to say there. It wasn't a match. The Miz and Kofi Kingston, solid match. You know, typical sort of Miz match. There's not really much to say about it except that the Miz loses, of course, would get a little bit distracted by the New Day, and then goes to find Shane McMahon, who he thinks for some reason should have been at ringside because he's their co-best friends. And he's his tag team partner. Now, this makes The Miz look a little bit stupid. I'm not going to lie to you. Because The Miz, and this is what makes me think that they are really pushing for Shane McMahon to, I guess, flip heel and The Miz to be the face in this situation. It's because The Miz is acting like he really is friends with Shane. And Shane's just kind of blowing him off. And the Miz should have been, you know, the heel Miz should have been a guy saying, oh, yeah, you're the best in the world. You're, you know, you're a GM. You're not even a real professional wrestler. I could dust you. This, that. No, he's not. He's playing it up like Shane is legitimately one of the best workers in the business. One third of the best in the world, as he says. You know, that's weird. It's weird, and I'm not sure that's going to work. If they're really going to try to shoot for Shane McMahon versus The Miz, I think that could miss the mark. I just don't think there's that many fans interested in that, Todd. What do you think?
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, I don't think it's going to work that way. It's not going to go that far.
I hope it doesn't, but that's where it seems like it's leading, Mike.
It seems like it's leading that way, and I mean, we still have percolating in the background Miz versus Daniel Bryan at some point, I would think. Now, how are they going to get to that when The Miz is in this feud with Shane McMahon. I don't know. I mean,
I don't know either. That's the thing. If you want to look forward in WWE programming on both Raw and SmackDown, it's kind of bleak. There's not much on Raw to anticipate we're going to see that we want to see. I don't necessarily want to see Baron Corbin and Braun Strowman. How's that a main event anywhere? Nobody cares. You've almost ruined Drew McIntyre, because why would Drew McIntyre be a second banana to anybody? I thought it just doesn't work. And there's a lot of, and even Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins is starting to lose momentum already from poor writing. And then over on SmackDown, what do you have? Okay, you got AJ Styles versus Daniel Bryan. That's going to be a great match. But then what past that? I don't see people on the horizon to say, oh, I can't wait to see AJ Styles fight fill in the blank. We've already seen him fight Nakamura, so we don't see no more of that. So who else? Daniel Bryan and maybe Rey Mysterio? Okay. I don't know. I don't see a, for such a deep talent pool, I don't see a lot of interesting matchups being worked toward, put it that way. So I'm not sure where this is going. Kind of bleak time here for the WWE with such an extensive roster and no matches anybody's really super looking forward to. That's unusual. So let's see. Let's cover, I guess, the Jeff Hardy 20th anniversary thing. I think that was done well. Time in a long time, Jeff Hardy just seemed likable. Now, by that, I mean, I don't like the shtick at all when he comes out and does the whole creatures of the night, within the den, my dreams and my plan. I don't like it. It sounds like he's just going through the motions now, and the delete thing is just a crutch. But this Jeff Hardy, this is the way he should be. Drop all the nonsense. You want to keep the makeup, keep the makeup. But this was the Jeff Hardy that I want to see. Seemed likable, seemed intelligent, cut a really good promo, because he probably wasn't really cutting a promo. He was just saying the truth. He's much better at that. And they had all the WWE superstars on stage, and I thought it was a nice touch that even some of the heels and people he fought against were still there and still applauding when they were talking about some of his accolades and 20 years in the business and everything. And I said, this makes it look legit. Makes it look like they're breaking kayfabe, and that's good. I knew somebody was going to confront them, and it turns out it's Samoa Joe. And Samoa Joe did an excellent job, because he could have been shticky and then we say, oh, now it doesn't feel like it's breaking kayfabe anymore. Instead, he went right for the jugular vein. Now, I'm sure this was all cleared 100% with Jeff Hardy, but man, was this effective. I mean, to come out there and literally say, I don't agree with honoring a man who has this many vices in his life that, if truth be told, for every time you thrilled the fans and gave them a tremendous performance, you also let them down. And everybody knew what he was talking about. Everybody knew he was talking about his drug and alcohol use. And Corey Graves did a good job of saying, look, there are places you don't go. That's pretty disgusting, really, to bring that up. It's pretty low class. That's a good move. And this all had a very good sense of being real. So kudos to the WWE for handling this segment perfectly. I don't think you could have handled it any more perfectly. It came off feeling genuine. For the first time in a long time, I'm totally suspending my disbelief, saying, wow, this is cool. This feels real. Every bit of it feels real. Jeff Hardy looking across between embarrassed and trying to defend himself. Samoa Joe saying, I personally don't respect people with these types of weaknesses. The only problem I have is I don't think the match is going to work. See, that's the problem. Jeff Hardy in his prime, Samoa Joe, yes. But this is a different Jeff Hardy now. And I'm not sure this match is going to live up to the great job they did in selling it. And it was a great job. But the beauty of pro wrestling is when two guys who can really go at it sell a fight this good, and then you're like, well, I can't wait to see it. But based on what I've seen and Jeff Hardy's in-ring performances these last 3 or 4 months, I'm not convinced this is going to be a great match, Mike.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. When Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles, or AJ Styles and Nakamura, you know, get together and they decide to sell their matches, you're going to say, well, you may not want to see another Nakamura AJ match, but when they get together and sell the match and do their usual job in selling the match, then you're probably going to change your mind, because they're consummate pros and they know what they're doing now. And we know we're going to get a good match out of those two guys, you know, or three guys or four guys or whatever it is. With this match, we don't know. We know we're going to get a pretty good match out of Joe, but we don't know what we're going to get out of Hardy, you know, because at times he's been lazy.
Yep. Or injured, or both. Yeah. That's my point. The combination of him being sort of lackluster in his performances lately, and then top that off with he's hurt and his body can only do so much. And Samoa Joe, not a guy who presses. If you're going to have a really good match with Samoa Joe, you got to create all the motion, so to speak. He's not a guy who presses. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't see this being a great match, but it definitely was a good segment, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. It reminds me of Jeff Hardy when he first came in, without the makeup, without the fancy stuff wearing. It's like reminds me of the old prime Jeff Hardy back in his prime, back in the mid-90s.
Yeah, Jeff Hardy, the problem with Jeff Hardy is he's so hot and cold. The one thing Samoa Joe said that is true, and I maybe doesn't have anything to do with drug or alcohol use, but for every time Jeff Hardy's had a great performance, he's also had some lousy ones. That is the truth. And lately it's been more on the other side, where you're just like, eh, it's a match. I mean, that's all you can really say is, yeah, okay. It's okay. There was nothing really super thrilling. Even when he's doing those high-risk moves, it's almost like, okay, here I go. Here's the planned spot, and I'll give it to you. But there's no real feel to it, that there's a real fight, or that he's really trying to pull out all the stops to win anymore. It doesn't have that feel to it. And I don't know. We'll see what ends up happening. I'm not overly thrilled with watching a Samoa Joe Jeff Hardy match, but I do think that this was a great segment. So we get to, of course, the Women's Battle Royal. Should say, well, before we do that, let's go and talk about the Randy Orton thing, which has gotten old quick. You know, when Randy Orton first started this new bad guy thing, where he just likes to hurt people and humiliate people and embarrass people, it was working. And then nothing really major came out of it, and it's starting to not work again. And now this thing with Rey Mysterio is, you know, it is what it is. It's not exciting. You'd have to do something more, and I don't know what you'd do short of – everyone knows Rey Mysterio has a bazillion masks, so to take one isn't exactly, you know, the end of the world. And I was very disappointed in the WWE for one thing. They made Randy Orton go out there and say the following. I've never understood this thing with the mask and the whole nine yards about it, blah, blah, blah. Now, mind you, I'm not insulting his culture. That's not what I'm doing. They made him say that. Underline the point that you're not trying to in any way, undermine the Mexican wrestling culture. Make sure you underline that point. We don't want people mad at us. No, you do want people mad at you. How come he can't go out and say, I never understood this crap anyway? All this Mexican wrestling, lucha crapola, where they wear masks and they call themselves superhero names and, come out with a cape and everything. Well, what do you need that for? It's garbage. It's not wrestling. That's what I wanted him to say, because then you're going to get every Lucha fan in the audience to be like, holy shit, did you hear what Randy Orton just said? He basically called the whole freaking culture trash. And Ray is the representative of that culture as much, if not more, than anyone. So then it does take on a little bit of a different meaning. Then it does take on a, wow, wait a minute. Rey Mysterio is kind of fighting for the credibility of the entire Lucha genre. Not just himself. But no, the WWE said, oh, we can't have that. That might cause controversy. So instead, you go out and say, no, no, I'm not undermining that at all. Why? It's exactly what Randy Orton should have done. That's exactly the way to get Randy Orton heat. But, again, Mike, this is the problem when you try to be a politically correct product.
Yeah, and think about this. Not only would it have drawn Ray into this thing, but you could absolutely have had Sin Cara show up. Is it Sin Cara that's on SmackDown, or is it the other one? I think it's
it would
Sin
be.
Cara.
Well, who's the Lucha House Party? Yeah, it's Sin Cara because that Kalisto's on the House Party.
Yeah, so you could absolutely have Sin Cara show up and cut a promo on him, saying basically you've insulted him, you've insulted me, you know. And there's another feud for Randy Orton to have, because you've got a guy who wants revenge on him for insulting his culture.
Exactly. Now again, Mike, there's a great storyline you could have had by this, because just like you said, and that you're exactly right, if you're going to have a big match with Rey Mysterio and he is just absolutely humiliated and insulted the entire genre, calling it trash and not wrestling and everything, then of course you have Sin Cara come out and try to defend it, but he can't. Maybe Rey Mysterio come out and make the save before he unmasks Sin Cara. And you could work this with Almas in a couple of different ways. Almas used to wear the mask, still comes out with it and takes it off sometimes. And you could have had either Almas flip and go on their side and say, you know, I'm defending the Lucha brand, or you could have had Almas side with Orton and say, that's why I came here, the stupidity, that's why I tear off the mask. I have a total disrespect for it or whatever, and that would have made him a huge heel with a huge angle. Instead, they just go opt for the politically correct path of saying, let me make things clear, I'm not insulting anybody's culture. I think that's a mistake, Mike.
It really is a mistake, and how many times over the past year and a half or so have we said that's a mistake? I mean, it's too many to count. And one other thing we haven't mentioned yet is they did play another commercial for another promo for Lars Sullivan. They're playing these promos on both shows, which I think is a smart
move.
Yeah,
that's what they're going to do, Mike. They're going to do we're in a bidding war against each other for Lars Sullivan. That's exactly what they're going to do. I would be shocked if he shows up on SmackDown, though, because I don't know who he'd fight. I'd rather see him on SmackDown. We need a big guy like that. But I don't know who he's going to fight. And, you know, the world's waiting to Vince McMahon's world is waiting to see, oh, wait, we'll have Lars Sullivan versus Braun Strowman, or Lars Sullivan versus you know, this big guy or that big guy that we got over here. We've got Bobby Lashley. We've got Drew McIntyre. We've got Baron Corbin. We got a lot of big guys. So I don't know. I had a feeling he might end up on Raw. But I think SmackDown, even though I don't know who he'd fight in SmackDown, I'd rather see him on SmackDown. So let's talk about the Women's Battle Royal a little bit. I'm glad the women had something to do that mattered. That's number one. I'm glad to see they fit them all into the show. That's a great thing. That's number two. The problem, it illustrated and underlined the point that the WWE doesn't utilize their women well. Because, except for one woman in that ring, Asuka, the only women that really mattered who we thought could win that Battle Royal were sitting outside the ring watching the Battle Royal. Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair. I'm going around saying, what's Lana's chances of winning? Zero. What are the Iconics' chances of winning either one of them? Zero. What is Mandy Rose's chance of winning this? Zero. What is Sonya Deville's chances of winning this? Zero. Maybe Naomi, 10% chance, 10, 15% chance. Asuka. Carmella, forget it, zero. So from the very beginning, I said, well, it's going to be one of two things. Either Naomi's going to win by turning on Asuka, and that'll lead to a feud after this three-way match at TLC, or Asuka's just going to flat win, because then you'll have the three women that quote-unquote matter in the SmackDown women's division all in the ring at the same time, and that's exactly what happened. So unfortunately, this Battle Royal was very anticlimactic because we didn't actually think anybody else was going to win. And that's always a problem. If you are a professional wrestling organization, of course you're going to have your workers who are basically the setup guys and the jabrones, so to speak, or the mid-carders. But you got to be able to put together a battle royal where if you're going to have 10 people, four or maybe five of them are legitimately possible winners. Because when we already know who's going to win, then it just becomes a matter of, well, who's going to get thrown out first? And then it's not exciting. This could have been really exciting if four or five of those girls were legitimately, wow, these girls are really, you know, top contenders. Every one of these girls is like an Asuka. Naomi is acceptable. So if you had three more Naomi Asuka types in there that you say this is how good they've been promoting them, then I'd be excited about it and say, wow, I don't know who's going to win. This is going to be really interesting. Wasn't interested in this battle royal because I knew from the very beginning it's going to be Asuka. They may as well have just handed it to her. So unfortunately, even though I liked where the event was going as far as getting all the women involved, and I thought that the opening of the show made it feel important, at the end of the day, Mike, it's 100% predictable, and that's the WWE's fault.
It is the WWE's fault, and furthermore, they're really mistreating Carmella. She's the next champion. She should be in the hunt for something. She should be in the hunt because she's the next champ. I mean, if you're gonna put Naomi in the hunt because she's the next champion, then Carmella should be there too. You know.
Yeah, and at least they could have put somebody over. Like, what they could have done was to say, look, Asuka's going to get bounced out of the bottom rope like she's hurt. You know, something's going to happen, and Asuka's going to fly outside and land on her face, but she's not out of the ring, got to go over the top rope. Carmella is going to look like she's eliminated, but then she's going to eliminate, like, Naomi last minute, or Naomi's going to eliminate Carmella last minute, but then it looks like she won, but they forgot that Asuka was on the outside and Asuka rolled in and eliminated them. Something that you say, oh, well, it made someone else look strong in the process. This didn't make any of these girls look strong in the process. It made Asuka look head and shoulders above every single person in that ring again. And the problem is you don't always have to undermine other people to build somebody up. And that's what the WWE does on a regular basis. Their idea of building somebody up is make everybody else look way, way inferior. You don't always have to do that, Mike.
No, you don't. I mean, think about it. Look at some of the other places that we talk about in Impact and ROH and people like that. I mean, you know, you look at how they treat their female wrestlers, and you look at the fact that we've got people in these companies. Now, granted, Rosemary's not there right now, but we know that if Rosemary comes back, she's gonna be at the top of the list to get a shot at the Impact title. We know that because they have not done what the WWE has done to Carmella and make Rosemary look weak. I mean, they put her in the coffin and all that stuff, and she's been out a while, but they really didn't make her look weak in that thing, you know?
Yeah, there are ways you can make a couple of people look strong and still have somebody win. And the WWE just doesn't do that because it's harder. So they just opt for the lazy, well, we'll just make Asuka look like she dominated everybody. Okay, and the rest of your women's division looks horrible due to it. I don't understand that logic. So, Todd, unfortunately, this was very predictable.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, we all knew Asuka was going to win that Women's Battle Royal to be the number one, be one of the number one contenders for that SmackDown Women's title in that three-way match at TLC.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the only other person, and I thought it was a very low chance, was Naomi, and I still said it's probably not going to happen. My only hope was a storyline was going to come out of it. Naomi was going to thought she win, and then Asuka bounces her out, and Naomi takes umbrage, even though that's the way it goes, or vice versa, and we're going to see like a thread of a storyline. We saw no threads of any storylines at all with any of this. And again, a good professional wrestling angle accomplishes more than one thing. This accomplished only one thing: who's going to be the third wheel in that TLC match. As long as you're going to do that anyway, as long as you're there anyway, and all the girls are in the ring anyway, then use that opportunity to say, yes, it's going to be Asuka, but let's start a feud. Let's start something for Lana. Let's start something for the Iconics. Let's start something for Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose at each other's throat again. Anything. Let's start something. And then we get two things out of this match. And again, Mike, they didn't do it.
They didn't do it, and that's the thing. I mean, really, that's what these matches are supposed to do. How many times in the past have we seen multiple things coming out of Royal Rumbles or Starcades or whatever, you know, or these bunkhouse stampedes or whatever that have happened that are these multiple people matches that – how many times have we seen multiple storylines coming out of those matches, you know?
Mike, it's almost a must in professional wrestling. I mean, it's just so basic. What would be wrong? Why, you've got the girls there anyway. So you're backstage and you're saying to the girls, okay, look, we're all going to have a female battle royal here. And Asuka's winning it and going on to the TLC. You girls are going to get thrown out in the following order or whatever the hell's going on, and that's it. And the girls say to themselves, okay, I'm losing. So they come out there with no motivation of, well, I'm just losing tonight. That's all. I lose, and then I go get dressed and go have a bite to eat. How come you can't say, look, yeah, Carmella, you're getting thrown out fourth or whatever, but in the process of this, you're going to take out both of the Iconics, but then on the outside of the ring, they're going to beat you down, and you're going to have a huge brawl with them that's going to look really real. You know, so real that maybe one of the girls in the ring actually stops wrestling to take a look at it, like, is anybody going to do something about this? This is a legitimate fight. And then somebody's dumping her out, and then she's pissed. And we've got something that distracts people saying, wait a minute, that looked real. Carmella and one of the Iconics, or both of them, look like they're really, and I mean, you know, screaming at each other, have the referees come tear them apart or whatever, and you say, well, okay, even if we don't buy it, even if we say this is just a gimmick, we still know something's going to come out of this. We got something coming out of this. How come you can't do that for a Carmella? How come you can't do it for a Naomi? How come you can't do it for the Iconics? How come Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville, who have been teasing back and forth, were friends, were enemies, were friends, were enemies? How come they couldn't get into it finally? How come maybe, wasn't it Mandy Rose who eliminated Sonya Deville? So how about if you had Sonya Deville eliminate Mandy Rose and Mandy Rose didn't take it so well, just like Sonya Deville kind of didn't take it so well. And they ended up brawling on the outside of the ring where people had to separate them or something instead. I'm not saying every girl had to have an angle in this, but pick two or three or whatever it's going to be and say, look, you girls are losing tonight, but you're losing to further a storyline for a program you're going to be working with this person. Imagine you go into the locker room. Let's just say you're a wrestler. You go into the locker room and you say, look, you're having a battle royal tonight, and yeah, you're getting thrown out fourth. And you say to yourself, okay, well, whatever. And, you know, we don't know what you're doing next week, but so you kind of feel like, well, I'm just an extra. I'm just a bench player in this. But if they came to you and said, you're getting thrown out fourth, the person who throws you out is getting thrown out fifth. And on the way back to the dressing room or whatever, she's attacking you. You're getting into a major brawl. There's going to be a big fight where a referee's got to break you up. It's even going to lead to some other girl, who, you know, watching getting dumped out. It's going to be a big deal because we're going to promote you and her for the next month or so. Then you'd say to yourself, oh, well, then there's a reason I'm getting thrown out fourth. And it's helping me because I get into a program with this worker who we can do something with. That's what I mean about missed opportunities. You're there anyway. The girls are there anyway. Please give us something so that one of these or two of these or three of these girls can walk back to that dressing room saying, yeah, I lost, but it's to further my program. There's something in it for me, not just tonight I go out to make Asuka look better than me. Okay, that's part of your job. But then the other part is to entertain the crowd with a good feud. So how come writers can't say, let's set something up for a couple of these girls? So next week on SmackDown, when, oh, I don't know, Sonya Deville fights Mandy Rose, Carmella fights one of the Iconics, there's a reason behind it. And you say, oh, I remember that. Yeah, that was a brawl. That's going to be kind of interesting. No, they don't do that, Mike. They're flat lazy when it comes to things like that.
I mean, you could have absolutely had, you know, somewhere along the line, eliminate the Iconics, and the Iconics get pissed off about it. How did this person, such and such a person, Carmella or Lon or somebody, eliminate us when we're two people and she's only one? You know, and then they come back and they eliminate her somehow.
Well, they did with Asuka. They let Asuka eliminate both of them. See, that's my point. Everything was Asuka, Asuka, Asuka. At one point, I thought they were going to do it, Mike, with Mandy Rose because she was kind of holding Asuka from getting back in the ring, and Sonya Deville was in the ring, and I'm like, here we go. Asuka's going to duck, and Sonya's going to hit Mandy, and then she's going to get thrown out, and she's going to blame Mandy, and they're going to be a fight. But they didn't even do that, Mike. They just let this be for nothing except rebuild Asuka.
Again, that's again, we talk about, and this plays into what we've been saying about the writing for the longest time. Yeah, it's poor writing, but it's also, oh, we're going to spoon feed you this crap, and you're going to eat it, and you're going to like it. Thank you, Road Dogg. You know?
Yeah. Anything. This is what I'm saying. Anything. As long as you have the people there. This is Pro Wrestling 101. Your job as a writer is to accomplish a couple of things. So you look around at the matches. We could have just had Jeff Hardy's 20th anniversary celebration, couldn't we? And you list all his accomplishments. He says, thank you very much. I'm looking forward to the next chapter of my life here in WWE. And that's it. But no, you use that as an opportunity to have Samoa Joe come out and start a program. Why can you not do this when you have these battle royals or these multi-team matches, excuse me, or whatever? Why can't you do this? This was your main event of SmackDown. The main event was boring because we knew who was going to win. So now you as a writer's job is to say, look, the majority of these fans already know who's going to win. So let's give them something aside from Asuka winning that's going, they're going to be able to take away from this battle royal. And then you find out, well, what's your plans? Are you going to break up Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville? No, you're not? Okay. Well, then let's have them get into it with the Iconics. And then we'll have Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville against the Iconics, where it's just going to be a big brawl. And those girls will have something to do for the next month. Feud with each other individually and as a tag team. Oh, you're going to break up Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville? Okay, well, let's further that story tonight then. Let's have them get into a major brawl. Let's have this be the night that all hell breaks loose between those two. Or no, you don't really have anything for them? Okay, well, how about Carmella? She's the next champion. Can we have Carmella and Naomi really get into it? Or you don't want that because they're both good guys? Okay, can we have Carmella get into it with one of the other girls? Anybody? So that we take away more from this battle royal than just Asuka's going to TLC. It wouldn't have taken any effort. The girls were in the ring anyway and were more than willing to do whatever you ask them to do. And all you had to do was say, and it's much better for these girls. Like I said, if you're out there saying, well, I'm just getting eliminated fourth and back to the dressing room I go and there's nothing, I don't know what I'm doing next week. I don't know what I'm doing next month. As opposed to, well, I'm getting eliminated, but this is the start of my big program with so-and-so. That's what I always would try to do as a promoter is to say, yes, you're losing. Yes, you're getting beat. Yes, you're being eliminated. But here's what going forward, here's the reason why. Here's the reason why. Yeah, Finn Balor, you're getting crushed by Baron Corbin and Drew McIntyre. But here's the reason why. Because we're setting up a big program with you and Drew McIntyre, and that's exactly what they're doing. Yeah, Elias, you're getting your guitar broke and this, that, and the other thing. You're getting a beat down, but we're setting up a big thing with you and Bobby Lashley. Okay, we get it. They don't do that with the girls. They're just like, no, these are the girls that matter. The rest of the girls' job is to just look inferior and get beat by them. And that shouldn't be the case. Becky Lynch is always going to be your top person over there for the foreseeable future, and Charlotte Flair right behind her. Asuka right behind her, too. Right there's three good people. Can we not have five? Naomi's there and well underutilized. And I would suspect that Carmella should be right in the hunt, too. So why can't we have that? Mind-boggling. I don't know, Todd. I mean, again, it was a very predictable battle royal, but something more should have came out of this.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it should have been something more out of this battle royal thing. It's very predictable and everything.
It shouldn't be that way for a main event. At least leave us with something else. So, let's rate SmackDown. Well, it certainly was better than Raw again. And it was better than last week's SmackDown. I still say there was a lot of missed opportunities. I still say that some of the writing appeared sloppy, but let's focus first on the positives. The return of Becky Lynch was a little shaky, but the fans have not seemed to lost their furor for her, so that's good. We're moving into a different territory with Charlotte Flair, where it looks like she's going to be a little bit of the old Charlotte Flair heel. I guess that's good. So those are good positives to start. The AJ Styles coming back against Daniel Bryan, I guess that's a positive. Fans want to see it. I want to see it. He did a pretty good job. The Samoa Joe skit with Jeff Hardy came off brilliant. I don't want to see the match. That's the problem. But for that segment, you can't get better. The Miz and the New Day's segment together was great. The Miz is walking that tightrope pretty well. It's going to be shaky ground, though, going forward with the Shane McMahon thing, if that's where they're going. And again, you can pull off really good skits and really good promos, but if the payoff isn't there, it's going to be tough. Fans are like, oh, I like the promo, but I don't want to see the match. Nakamura and Rusev is probably not the feud I want to see from Nakamura. It's not that Rusev's lost a lot. They took away Aiden English, who we haven't seen in I don't know how long. Told you they were going to waste that. The Rusev Day chants are there, but it's not the same anymore because the team's not together. The whole unit's not together. They've really wasted Rusev. And the Nakamura feud is going to do one of two things. It's going to be either Nakamura's way to kiss his contract goodbye and get out, or it's going to solidify Nakamura as the U.S. champion and lead to a bigger match for him, which either way, it's, you know, either way we lose as fans. We either probably lose Nakamura or Rusev gets buried. So I don't know. The Battle Royal, I mean, Asuka won. We knew she was going to win. Nothing else was accomplished out of it. The Bar and the Usos are going to be another good fight. That's always a good fight. I'll still want to watch that. I mean, there are a lot of people saying, we've seen it, yeah. And I agree, it's time to bring some other tag teams into the picture, but it's still going to be a good match. The Big Show thing, I don't know. I scratch my head. I have no idea what they're doing with that. None. So I think this is kind of like a right in the middle sort of a show. There was ups, there was downs, there was good opportunities, but then the match is not something we want to see. There was wasted opportunities. So I'm going to give it the C, just a flat out C. I think it was in the middle this week. What's your rating, Mike?
Okay, I'm going to put it to you this way. It didn't have anything that would drastically pull it down for me like what happened last night with or two nights on Monday night with Raw with the whole thing with the women's thing. And me and you have talked about that on text messages. That's what pulled Raw down for me. Other than that, I agree with you. It's a good solid C for me. You know, I mean, I could have dealt with them having more. I mean, look, having more for the women to do, setting up more feuds and all that stuff. You know, I mean, really, if you look at it, every time Lana puts on the accolade, nobody gets out of it. You know,
right?
So, I mean, in one way they're making her look bad, but in another way, they're making the move look good because when she puts it on a girl, the girl doesn't get out of it. So, I mean, what are you going to do with Lana? I mean, are you going to make her into something or are you going to keep her a jabron? You know, that's what's confusing.
I don't know. And you had Zelina Vega out there who, you know, we know Almas is associated with her. You could have had her do something to one of the – or have Almas come out and distract. Something could have happened. They just, it was a lazy, lazy battle royal. Now, I had somebody say to me, wait a minute, you just said SmackDown was better than Raw this week, but you gave Raw a better review on the show. I gave Raw a B-. Here's why I did. SmackDown was better in terms of enjoyability to watch. I enjoyed SmackDown more, just as a fan to sit and watch. Raw, while it was not enjoyable to watch, had more branches on the tree. I leave Raw saying, this is probably going to happen. It looks like they're going in this direction with this person. It looks like they're going in this direction with that person. I think we're going to see this with that. I didn't see any of that, or much of it, on SmackDown. So that's why I gave it a slightly. I gave Raw a B-. I gave this a C. So very slightly better, only because there's more branches. I didn't say I like where those branches are leading. But as a writer, they did their jobs at least and said, well, like it or not, here's the directions we're going. So at least we as fans know. Right now we're looking at SmackDown saying, well, I don't know where they're going with some of this. We know AJ's going to fight Daniel Bryan, but what after that? We don't know what's next for The Miz. How quick is this thing going to happen with him and Shane? I don't know. Why is The Miz not focusing on a title? I don't know. He wants a tag team title? I don't know. How come Randy Orton's already done with the, you know, Jeff Hardy and he's moving on to Rey Mysterio and okay, Samoa Joe? I mean, if Samoa Joe loses to Jeff Hardy, Samoa Joe could pack his bags. So that's why I give it just a slightly higher grade than SmackDown this week, just because there was more writing potential that came out of Raw than I think that came out of SmackDown. But I did enjoy SmackDown more. Todd, what's your rating?
I got to go with you there. I got to go with a C.
So we're all pretty much in agreement that it was a C show. SmackDown is usually the better show. If you're a wrestling fan, there's less hype, there's more action. But SmackDown is running into a little bit of a problem too. And that problem is they use all of their 2 hours to promote the same people and they forget about people. Sanity, where are they? We don't know. Almas, who was supposed to light the world on fire, we don't know. Where's Aiden English? We don't know. And it gets to the point where you say, yeah, this is not what it should be. The tag team division should be great. You've got a lot of great tag teams. Think about this for a minute. Forget what they've accomplished in the WWE. I just want you to think about this. You have the Usos, The Bar, The New Day, Sanity, Anderson and Gallows, and the Colognes. That's five and maybe the Bludgeon Brothers if they get healthy. That is six very, very good, serious tag teams. How many are we seeing? Okay, one's hurt. What are we seeing? We're seeing Usos, New Day, Bar. That's it. Sanity can't even get a win over nobody. How come we can't have one match on a show that's Sanity faces local competition? Sanity faces, anybody that they can get over on. Nope. We're not building up any other teams. We're dancing with, the person that brought us, so to speak. I think that's a mistake because then the matches get old and they're not fresh anymore, Mike, and this is where people start to complain.
You're right, and frankly, if our theory holds true with Bray Wyatt, SmackDown may not have the Bludgeon Brothers when they come back,
Yeah, and I think my theory is going to hold true because from what I've been told, Bray Wyatt may be the person who replaces Braun Strowman at TLC. They're going to do that. They should do that right away. But then they run a danger, don't they, Mike? Because then the danger is if Bray Wyatt wins, what's the point of seeing Braun Strowman against Baron Corbin? If Bray Wyatt loses, we're back to Bray Wyatt as ineffective. So that's a tough one.
It is a tough one, but again, I get your point, but that's my point was, you just named six tag teams. Even without the Bludgeon Brothers, you still have five tag teams there on SmackDown. That what have you done with them? And look, as far as couldn't we? I would assume that English was there somewhere on SmackDown. Couldn't we have did something where he comes out to the ring, causes Lana to get eliminated somehow?
Absolutely.
Couldn't we have done at least that?
Absolutely. Again, Aiden English was wasted. He was I warned everybody. Remember, I told you, they're not building Aiden English up to be any threat to Rusev, so this isn't going to be a major match when they break up, and it wasn't. It was a three-minute squash match on SmackDown. Well, you could have got so much more out of that. Now the question is this. Why didn't you? If you had all the writers in the room, then the question I would ask is, why didn't you milk that? Why didn't you start building Aiden English up in this tag team as a guy who was really doing well? Maybe even well enough to surprise Rusev and Lana, who were saying, wow, Aiden, you've really come into your own here. I mean, have the announcer say, this is a different Aiden English. I mean, he was always pretty good, but this tag team has really brought the best out in Aiden English. That way, Aiden English would have felt like, if I lose this tag team, I lose all the good things they said about me. Everybody's saying how much better I become and how I'm a great wrestler now. And if I lose this, I might lose that. And that would be his motivation for saying, I want to keep this tag team at all costs. And when he loses it, you would say, yeah, but he's been good, man. He might be able to take Rusev out. And then if he was a thorn in Rusev's side for, 3 months, it works. But no, everything is just, let's do it now and get it over with. It's almost like, we know it sucks, just do it, on to the next thing. We got bigger fish to fry. You don't have bigger fish to fry. If you gave me a month and any two people on SmackDown, I'll make you care about who wins. If you gave me carte blanche to do anything I wanted to do, as long as people really cared about who won between two workers that you choose, I'll do it because it's not that hard. You just have to play with people's emotions and make people feel sympathy or empathy for one and hatred for another. And it's not that hard to do. It's just they're lazy. And before we leave, I do want to mention that on Sunday's show, we are going to be talking a lot about what the outcome of being this lazy could be, because Cody Rhodes was doing a question and answer session recently, and he was blatantly flat out asked about AEW and what we can expect. And his answer was as follows. There will be an announcement in January. And I know that's not today, but trust me, the announcement's going to be bigger than even any of you guys think. That's his exact words. So what does that mean? Well, we know AEW is a guarantee. But when he says something like it's bigger than you even think, then I start to think they've got their TV deal. Their TV deal starts as early as February or late January. The WWE better sit up and take notice. So we're going to be talking a little bit about that on Sunday. We're also going to be talking about WWE in panic mode when it comes to the UK wrestling, you know, the NXT UK. All of those workers were told, yes, you're working for NXT UK, but you can work for any of the other organizations too. You can work for any of the UK organizations. Now they've rescinded that and said, no, not only can you not work for any of the UK organizations, you can't even wrestle for against certain workers. So the WWE's rescinded their wrestle for who you want to, and they are now basically wanting to control all of the UK wrestling by saying, we are going to control who these guys can fight. They signed next to everybody. And they did it with an understanding that, well, yeah, we're globbing up all your talent, but don't worry, because they're still going to be allowed to wrestle for you. Now they're saying, well, they still will be allowed to wrestle for you if you allow us call the shots, if you work for us. That's going to put a lot of these UK wrestling smaller organizations in trouble. And now they're even saying you can't work a card anywhere if it's against a Ring of Honor guy, if it's against a Lucha Underground guy, if it's against a Ring of Honor guy. You've got to clear with us who you're even going to wrestle, and we can either say yes or no, which is literally made changes have to happen to independent cards. And led one wrestler to say, who is it in the UK I can fight now? So, yeah, there's major changes coming with the WWE who realize storms are brewing. So, Mike, on Sunday, we're going to discuss a little bit of this, but if the WWE was ever ripe for the picking, now is the time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, think about it. If these guys who have signed for the NXT UK can't do what they want to do, and their contract comes up, and Cody Rhodes is circling like a shark with them, some of these guys are going to end up in that federation with him. And like you said, if and we'll get into more of this on Sunday, but if the announcement is that we have a television contract and it starts right now, you know, then that's scary to the WWE, and that could be possibly why they're doing what they're doing with these guys.
Well, I have to assume that if Cody Rhodes makes that kind of announcement and says it's bigger than even you guys think, well, here's what we think. Up to this point, we think you're starting a federation called AEW. You're trying to sign a whole bunch of stars, including some WWE stars from it, and it looks like you're going to have a pay-per-view called Double or Nothing. Those are all things that are not surprising to us or bigger than we think. So to say it's bigger than you think means it's bigger than that. So what's bigger than that? Bigger than that is, and we also have a major TV deal. So I'm assuming that that's what the announcement is, that Cody Rhodes is going to announce in, I think it's New Year's Day. And they've been teasing, by the way, if you watch their online show that they put on, Being the Elite or whatever it's called, they've been doing this weird storyline where they're doing a New Year's Day party. One of the guys is having a New Year's Day party, and everybody he asks is saying, well, we're going to be busy that day. We're going to be busy that day. We're going to be busy that day. What does that mean? And then it's announced, well, on that day, pretty much, we're going to have an announcement. I'm going to dig into it more over the next couple of days and see if I can find anything out about what that announcement could be, but I'm almost guaranteeing you that the AEW has probably found a television deal. And this, more than anything else, if this in any way hinders the WWE, it's their own fault. It's their own fault. Because at the end of the day, they're the ones who let Cody Rhodes walk because he wasn't happy, rather than to just acquiesce a little and say, well, what do you want to do here? What is it that you have in mind that you'd like to do here? Anyway, we'll talk about that more on Sunday. All I can say about this week's SmackDown, folks, is wait and see. We're looking down the barrel of a lot of matches that are questionable as far as do we want to see them. I don't think there's anybody excited about Shane McMahon versus The Miz, if that's where we're heading. I'm not sure there's a ton of people excited about Rusev versus Shinsuke, if that's where we're heading, which obviously we are. You know, we'll wait and see. Rey Mysterio and Randy Orton, eh. Samoa Joe and Jeff Hardy, eh. Anyway, folks, thanks for joining us. We'll see you Sunday with more Wrestle Chat Radio.
You're listening to Wrestle Chat Radio. Wrestle Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.